Hi.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Okay. 12-27-17, Vitson versus Holder. And Ms. Glazer, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. This case comes to this court on an appeal from the Board of Immigration Appeals, which affirmed the IJ's decision. And there are two main issues involved. And that is, first one is whether Mr. Bitting has invoked properly and satisfied the exception to the one-year issue. And the second one is the substantive adjudication of the withholding claim. We respectfully submit to the court that what is at the heart of this case is what is a factual finding, both for purposes of this court jurisdiction under Section 1252, as well as under the board's own regulation, which is 100341D. In this case, the IJ failed to make necessary factual findings, both as to what have happened in the past, as well as predict the factual finding of what will happen in the future.
Is there any evidence in the record that would demonstrate that Mr. Bitson could not simply relocate to another region of Bulgaria? In other words, does the record support a conclusion that the influence of the Galev brothers is countrywide?
Your Honor, that was never raised by the IJ. The IJ didn't make that decision. It was not litigated before the board. What we will submit is that the background evidence shows the proliferation of those criminal groups within the country and the way they operate. The Galev group is the stronghold in a particular area of Bulgaria. They basically divide the country into their territory and they rule it as a private cities and private bases of operation for them. So the relocation was not really litigated in this case, and the board did not address that. So we have not addressed it. And if really it is an issue, if it is a basis and the court finds that there is a claim for either asylum or withholding because we have a private actors, then the IJ will have to make the determination of whether... I apologize.
No, I apologize to you for cutting you off, but I wanted to ask, with respect to the issue of changed circumstances, it's been argued to us by your opponent that this is a question that we shouldn't even address because it's not a pure question of law. So what's that response from you on that?
Well, Your Honor, again, I respectfully submit that that's not the case, and if I may elaborate. The IJ never made a finding that there were no changed circumstances. What the IJ said is, and if I actually will quote the non sequitur of the IJ on the issue, that is page 85-86, is the IJ basically said that he was involved in some sort of a trial somewhere in Bulgaria as a witness, and I found this is not a changed circumstance. Well, the changed circumstances that we asserted and the board determined is whether the activity of the father in the participation in this highly public trial amount to a changed circumstance. The IJ never mentioned that Galev trial in which the father participated. The board did not really was aware of the problem because we raised it on appeal. The board went and said, we don't care. What we're going to go and say is that the participation in the Galev trial and the father's participation is not an activity in which this applicant himself participated in the country outside of place of residence to qualify for the exception. As we presented in our reply brief, however, in applying that per se rule, the board made a clear error of law because the regulation, as we stated them in the reply brief, clearly shows that the list that was contained in the regulation was non-exhaustive. In fact, the regulation said, we're just adopting some of the suggestion, we're rejecting some, we're listing some, and they pretty much said, the IJ must make a determination. Is there an occurrence? And if an occurrence has been stated, is that occurrence materially affecting the eligibility for asylum? Or if it's the exceptional circumstances, is it directly related to the late filing? You make those factual findings, and then you determine whether there's a tardy application or an excused application. What the board went in, they said, Well, we don't really care what the IJ said because he didn't say much on the issue of the 1 year. We are ruling as a matter of law. An activity that happens while the individual, the son, was in the United States cannot excuse the filing. Then in the extraordinary circumstances, they went and said, well, he didn't have immigrant status. He didn't have non-immigrant status. He was not a TPS registrant. He was not a parolee. Ergo, no way he falls within the regulatory claim. Again, a per se rule that was applied. That's not what the regulation that the Attorney General promulgated states. In fact, it's a non-exhaustive. What we submit is that it could be that the IJ may make a decision that no occurrence occurred, or it was not related, or it's not materially affecting the eligibility. But the IJ never made those decisions. The board went and filled up the gap by making a per se rule. Now, our submission to the court is that since the IJ never made a decision, then either the board made a per se rule of law, which will be reviewable, or they went in and engaged in an impermissible factual finding, which 1003.1d does not permit. So either they infringed on their own regulation by engaging in improper fact-finding on appeal, or they simply too restrictively construed their own regulation. And again, it is a regulation, and I believe this court will review their interpretation under our view, Robbins, and that is they will not be given deference in interpreting their own regulation if it's plainly erroneous or if it is inconsistent with the regulation. And we believe that the clear indication on what the Attorney General was promulgating defies and refutes the approach that the BIA took in this particular case, and that the court does have jurisdiction to review it. Your Honor, I think I'm out.
Let me ask you a question. Are you holding with your argument that Mr. Bitson was in parole status and that that was a result of his having filed this new application for different immigration status?
Well, we are arguing that it was akin to parole. What we're saying is authorized stay. And what both the statute and the regulation have such term as non-immigrant status, legally authorized, legally present, and authorized stay. What he had was stay authorized by the Attorney General during the pendency of the non-frivolous timely application for asylum. What we were saying is...
Where does the word parole get used or applied in that context?
Well, parole was one of the occurrences which the regulation was mentioned, that if you were paroled, you were authorized to be in the United States.
And so are you saying Mr. Bitson was paroled, that he was in a parole status?
Well, we are saying that it's similar. It was, and again, it's not a non-immigrant status, it's not a status, it's not a benefit granted under the statute. It was a grace from the Attorney General, such as the parole, such as the deferred action, and the authorized stay.
Well, does parole status, is that a term of art under the immigration law so that you can't just capture it for your own purposes?
Parole is a term of art.
Yeah.
Authorized stay, deferred action, or other authorized statuses granted as a grace by the Attorney General are not defined in the Act.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Ms. Walls. Oh, 1 minute. And it'll be afternoon.
Oh, it's good morning for another minute.
Yes, I'll say good morning. May I please the court? Kelly Walls.
I'll say to you good afternoon.
Okay, good afternoon. Kelly Walls for the Attorney General. 6 years after Mr. Bitson's third entry to the United States, he filed an asylum application claiming he feared persecution by the Gallov Brothers crime syndicate based on his opposition to organized crime and his belief that the Gallov Brothers target family members of witnesses who testified against them.
In Bulgaria.
In Bulgaria.
Not elsewhere.
Not elsewhere. No, at least not any claim that he has raised. The court's jurisdiction to consider Mr. Bitson's untimely asylum application is limited to the legal narrow question of whether the filing of a change of status application functions as a grant of parole to establish extraordinary circumstances. No legal authority supports Mr. Bitson's contention that it does.
You know, in the reply brief, Mr. Bitson cites the BIA's opinion in matter of NM, for the proposition that exposing government corruption could constitute the expression of political opinion. And so how do you respond to that? It's at page 8 of the reply brief.
I am familiar with his argument. Actually, I'm a bit perplexed by it from the sense that Mr. Bitson has claimed that he fears persecution by organized crime members because his father testified against them in a trial. Mr. Bitson's father retired from the military in 1999. There's no evidence that he was a member of the government in any shape or form, and instead simply that he agreed to help the Bulgarian government in a trial that they had initiated. So this whistleblower concept and highlighting of corruption is somewhat confusing to me in that it doesn't appear that he actually functioned as a whistleblower, nor was it actually government corruption, but the prosecution of organized crime members. So I'm just not sure the matter of NM is even applicable in this case. Indeed, Mr. Bitson never identified what the political opinion is that would be imputed to him from his father or whether he, in fact, had an actual political opinion, so much as he opposed the Gallup brothers, which is at bottom just an opposition to crime, which is not a political opinion. That the Gallup brothers case was politicized in itself in the European Union is not enough to show that the Gallup brothers would target Mr. Bitson for his political opinion or a political opinion imputed to him.
One of the problems I had in analyzing this case, I'll confess to you, was that if I were drawn to the government's view of the facts, and I agreed with you on those issues with respect to not being a real threat to Mr. Bitson, that there were other fact-based issues, I'm not sure that this court's permitted to go there. So I'm trying to figure out procedurally if there's a stop on our weighing that evidence and considering the merits of Mr. Bitson's claim that he advanced before the immigration authorities. And, you know, it's not my usual work to pass on immigration appeals, so I'm having to sort of figure this out as I go. But I know it's a complicated procedural process. So would you talk me through, at least, maybe my colleagues will be impatient with this, but talk me through the process so I understand the scope of our authority and our permission to reach the issues that have been advanced.
Sure. First, I think it's important to understand the application that Mr. Bitson filed. It's an asylum application, but that application also is an application for what's called withholding of removal and protection under the Convention Against Torture. An application for asylum must be filed within 1 year of the alien's entry, with certain exceptions that are at issue in this case. If the application is found not to be timely, the alien nevertheless may continue on his application for withholding and protection under the Torture Convention. Factually, that may be the exact same claim as the asylum, but the relief that's available is limited because of the date of filing. So in this case, the questions before this court are, first, was Mr. Bitson's asylum application, did it fall within one of the exceptions to the one-year bar for the asylum application? On that question, the court's jurisdiction is limited by the Immigration and Nationality Act to questions of law or constitutional claims. And it is our argument that the question of whether or not Mr. Bitson demonstrated that the events in Bulgaria were material change circumstances is a factual question, as this court held in Viracocha, and that the court cannot consider that issue. The second exception would be the extraordinary circumstances one, and because Mr. Bitson presented a very narrow legal question before the board regarding whether or not the change of status application acted as a grant of parole, and that can be considered without really involving the facts of his case at all. It's a legal question as to the effect of that application. We would say that the court can consider that very narrow issue. Then the second part of the case is assuming that the court agrees that the asylum application was untimely, for his withholding claim, did he establish that the government was unable or unwilling to protect him, and would any persecution be on account of a protected ground, in this case political opinion or the particular social group of family? Over those issues, the court would have jurisdiction in the context of the withholding application.
That's helpful.
Okay.
What should we make of this overstatement of the standard that the BIA cited from the Marcos case? Must the government be completely unable to afford protection to the alien, or is it enough for the alien's government to be unable or unwilling to protect the alien?
Sure. The Immigration and Nationality Act uses the language unable or unwilling. In this case, in Margos, this court actually said that it was not presented with a case in which the government is unwilling and completely unable to afford protection. Whether or not that's a heightened standard that this court has adopted, I'm not completely sure. But I would say that even if the immigration judge misspoke by saying it required complete helplessness, this is, like Margos, this is not a case where there's complete helplessness. In fact, the Bulgarian government initiated proceedings against the Galov brothers, and after the completion of those proceedings, by Mr. Bitson's own testimony, they placed his father, a witness in that case, into a witness protection program. There's just simply been no evidence that the Bulgarian government is either unable or unwilling to protect those threatened by the Galov brothers. Now, Mr. Bitson did present evidence that one witness's house had been bombed and that the Galov brothers had targeted an investigative journalist. The unable or unwilling standard does not require 100% success. No government can protect every single person from every single threat. What it requires is showing the government would either be unable to do so or unwilling to do so. And the fact that the Bulgarian government has protected Mr. Bitson suggests that there is no reason why they would not afford the same protection to his son. There's just simply no evidence to compel the conclusion that the government is unable or unwilling to protect Mr. Bitson should he return to Bulgaria. If I may quickly address the jurisdictional question with the one-year bar, opposing counsel now seems to somewhat twist the argument she's making, arguing that it's not simply parole, but that is the equivalent to the filing of the change of status application, but some larger question. That's actually not the question that the board was presented with, and we'd argue that that's not an exhausted issue and that the court should not consider it. Moreover, I would point out that by regulation, an extraordinary circumstance includes temporary protected status, the maintenance of legal status, or parole. As explained in my brief, we find no evidence that this, no legal authority to suggest that there was any grant of parole in this case. But even if we were to look at the bigger picture of whether he had some sort of unnamed legal authority to remain in this country, I'd make the same argument as I did for parole. Mr. Bitson cannot unilaterally confer any authority on himself that is required to be in the discretion of the Attorney General. He cannot simply file an application and expect that to give him legal status. The memorandum that Mr. Bitson presented to the immigration judge discusses what happens if an alien files a change of status application while their legal status has expired, leaves the country, and then comes back, and whether or not that period of time where they had their change of status application filed but had no other lawful status would render them inadmissible to returning to the United States. That's a completely separate question dealing with a completely separate section of the statute that has absolutely nothing to do with the filing of asylum applications. So we'd suggest that any applicant cannot unilaterally confer status upon themselves, whether it be named or unnamed or if found in the act or just some sort of grace of the Attorney General. That is an act by the Attorney General or the Department of Homeland Security. If the court has no other questions, we would just ask that the petition for review be dismissed in part with a jurisdictional question. And
I had one other question. Sure. Is this still a live controversy? Is Mr. Bitson still here?
As far as I know, I have not been notified that he's been removed. But we don't always have the most up-to-date information. Opposing counsel may be able to confirm that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf. Okay. Ms. Glazer?
Just to respond, yes, Mr. Bitson is presently in the country. And actually, there have been developments with respect to the Galov brothers, which probably will be subject to a motion to reopen with additional evidence, but they are not before the court. One thing I'd like to mention is what we have argued in front of the board and in front of the court is based on a particular memorandum which states that the service will deem the alien to be within a period of stay authorized by the Attorney General and not unlawfully present if the alien has filed a non-free release application for change of status and the application is still pending provided that such application was timely filed. In these circumstances, the alien benefits from continuation of the period of stay authorized by the Attorney General, but not from a continuation of status. So what we have argued is that the agency itself gave a notice to everybody. You file a timely application. We wait until we decide. While you're waiting, you are authorized to be here. What we've argued is an individual who is being placed in that situation should not be forced to affirmatively go in and apply for asylum. And simply, that is, makes no sense. If an individual is granted a change of status and got a student visa, that person will be here as a student. He will have to establish that he has a non-immigrant intent. He will go back. If he goes in and applies for asylum and the asylum officer is not satisfied, the asylum officer will have to refer them to immigration court for removal proceedings. It makes no sense. The regulation did not intend that result, and that's what we've presented. And one or second mention to the court with respect to the matter NM. It was brought to the attention of the court based on the statement in the respondent's brief in which they asserted that an anti-crime opinion is not a political opinion for purposes of withholding of removal, a proposition that the board has clearly and squarely rejected. In fact, the board said in that decision, we send it to the IJ, here are some factors that are relevant, make a determination whether there is a motive by the prosecutor as to imputed political opinion. And it's a matter of fact that the IJ has to make in the first place. If the court has no other question.
So very much. Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement.